In the name of one God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. You may be seated. Well, we've had quite a few different kinds of Sundays recently. All Saints Day, St. Martin's Day. Today's Christ the King Sunday. Starts to make me feel like we're, you know, like Major League Baseball, trying to have special Sundays to draw people into worship. Hope you got your bobblehead St. Martin last week. But no, it just happens to go that way here in November. And this is the end of the liturgical calendar. It begins anew next week in Advent. It's known as the beginning of the liturgical year. But this Sunday, Christ the King, unlike all the other ones, St. Martin's, All Saints Day, Pentecost, those days have been remembered in the church for hundreds and hundreds of years. Christ the King is brand new in terms of church history, under 100 years old. It was actually started in 1925 by Pope Pius XI. And he instituted Christ the King Sunday amidst the rising secularism and nationalism going on in Europe and Russia, against the tide of the atheistic governments, against the tide of nationalism, which replaced God with the government, with the state, and resulted in lots of violence. And the collect for today, the first part reads, Almighty and everlasting God, whose will it is to restore all things and thy well-beloved Son, the King of kings and the Lord of lords, mercifully grant that the peoples of the earth, divided and enslaved by sin, may be freed and brought together under his most gracious rule, calling us to look to the King of heaven above us, above all dominion, a King who is good, a God who rules justly and truly loves us, unlike our earthly kings and queens, unlike our earthly rulers, which disappoint. And it says, peoples of the earth divided and enslaved by sin. The division and enslavement we put ourselves in is true in any period of history, but it was very apparent in the mid-1920s. You had the Bolshevik Revolution at the end of World War I when the communists eventually took over Russia in a bloody revolt. But in order to bring about the world they wanted, they had to enact a lot of violence, to have the purges and destruction in order to bring this brave new world about. At that time, Mussolini was in charge of Italy and bringing about fascist Italy. And a protege was following him closely in Germany named Adolf Hitler. He was beginning his rise to power, legal rise to power, as he would soon destroy many, many people. If God is dead, as many people thought at that time, therefore the kingdom of self, the kingdom of the state, should reign. If we've worked out God in our minds, then we are in charge. And that results in the death brought about by Nazism and communism. How do you build this new society? How do you get people to fall in line with this new vision of the world? As peaceful as sometimes it may try to be, apparently only by force. Throughout history, when they want to come up with some new regime, especially some sort of atheistic regime, only by force does it seem to be able to come about at all. The Cultural Revolution in China under Mao Zedong, thousands and thousands of people died, were killed in order to bring that about. Stalin killed many, many of his enemies, purged them, actually starved the Ukrainian people to get more money from their wheat to pay for factories, to bring about his vision of the world. Hitler used the Holocaust to bring about his vision of a good society, murder and force. But that kind of power, that kind of force, isn't just a 20th century thing. The French Revolution even had this. As it got more and more reactionaries, it tried to bring about its understanding of liberty, equality, and fraternity. Ironically, it went to the Reign of Terror to bring that about and sent many people to the guillotine who didn't believe in their version of liberty and equality and fraternity. And in their new society, they even killed many clergy who didn't go along with what they believed. Without God, that strong power, that strong force seems to be the way that it comes about. Now, I'm not arguing for theocracy. That's what ISIS is doing with their murders and beheadings. The Taliban with their mutilations and many things they do to bring about their vision of a just world. No, Jesus and St. Paul didn't believe in theocracy. Indeed, they actually distanced themselves from the government. Jesus said, let the state be the state. Let the government be the government. St. Paul said, pray for them. They need it. Those governments use right-handed power. Right-handed power, making things happen by force, by edict, by the sword, by blood, by threat. Right-handed power, might making right. And unfortunately, not just the government, but the church has done this throughout history as well. Especially when you look at Charlemagne, the first Holy Roman Emperor in Europe, as he was conquering many of the vestiges of barbarianism and paganism in Europe, he essentially said he would convert Europe by baptism or by the sword. And of course, the Crusades, trying to convert and change the world by war, and a horrible legacy that we still have to deal with. But how does God operate? How does God operate to bring about change in the world? Is he, on this Christ the King Sunday, is God just a bigger, stronger, faster version than our earthly kings and queens? A superhero God who can jump tall buildings, bigger, stronger, faster? Is God just more? Of course, God is infinite and all-powerful. But when God came to earth, when God came to earth in Jesus Christ, and especially on the cross, his ultimate act, God showed us left-handed power. In that mercy, in that death on the cross, God showed us a different kind of power that changes, brings about change for a lifetime. Martin Luther coined this phrase, left-handed power, to explain mercy, to explain grace and death, as opposed to brute force or brute emotional force or guilt. Jesus going to the cross when we deserve punishment. And this kind of power, this left-handed power, doesn't look like power at the beginning, but it actually saves. This left-handed power restores. It changes people as opposed to forcing them to have an outer change. Now, right-handed power is good because it works, right? It works in general. We're thankful for right-handed power and the organization of our military. When you're at the office, you appreciate right-handed power so you can get things done, so that people follow orders. You need to do this. It's part of your job. If you don't, you will be fired. There's no ambiguity. There's no gray area. It's very clear. Right-handed power in our world gets stuff done. But it doesn't save. And it certainly doesn't promote good relationships. And it certainly doesn't restore people when they've been cast out, when they didn't make the cut, or you're in broken relationship with them. Jesus chose left-handed power to change people and to create the world's largest religion. He chose left-handed power over justifiable punishment. Left-handed power when we did deserve punishment. See, at the cross, we deserved that punishment. We broke God's law. As we say in our prayers, we've for the things we've done and left undone, for where we didn't meet God's law, where we disobeyed God's law, where we didn't do what we should have done, where we've thought about what we shouldn't have thought about, we deserved punishment. But instead, God showed mercy in the gospel. God gave Jesus the punishment. He took that death. He could have overthrown the Roman army, called his angels, as Satan advised him to do, and saved himself. As the mocker said at the cross, he could have taken himself down, but he didn't. Like a parent, think back to your parents choosing forgiveness or a show of love to you when you clearly broke the rules. A parent showing a child mercy when they clearly deserve punishment. There's a book by Mockingbird Ministries called Judgment and Love. I used this book with my youth group in my former parish, and it was the favorite of the things we used with them. It was different stories just written by young adults reflecting on their teenage years. And the story in which they did something in which they deserved, admittedly they deserved judgment. They stole mom and dad's keys and wrecked the car. They did something, vandalization at school. They clearly broke the rules. And at the moment they were just fearing and awaiting that heavy hand, the right-handed power of punishment that they deserved, they surprisingly got love. They inexplicably were granted forgiveness by someone above them, in power, and they never forgot it. That instance of forgiveness and mercy in the face of what they actually deserved changed them and helped them understand their need for the gospel, and ultimately their need to share that gospel with others. Left-handed power. A power that saves and brings people back into relationship. And this also teaches grace. It helps us understand the good news that we have been given unmerited love in Jesus Christ. And a reminder that that is what we got from God, and that we need to give it to others. Now again, right-handed power works in the short run. It works as long as you're putting the pressure on it, as long as you're keeping the boot on the neck. But once you take it off, it's no longer there. Or if you keep it on through physical or emotional pressure, it creates resentment. It creates rebellion. It doesn't bring about that which you want. It may create even obedience for a time, but not salvation. The left-handed power of mercy may make you look bad as a parent, as a boss, as a commanding officer, as a coach. It may even make you look vulnerable or weak. But if it saves them, if it restores them, if it lifts them up, then it's worth it. When St. Paul was writing to the early church, he was dealing with all the problems that the church was dealing with as they were arguing over this very gospel, as they were arguing over how to live with all the different people that bringing their religious differences, their tribal differences, their ethnic differences. Now they were here all together, and Paul said, we have the ministry of reconciliation. The same rules are at play for how God saved you and how we ought to work with each other. We have the ministry of reconciliation. As we have been reconciled to God through Jesus, we ought to reconcile to others. We forego justifiable anger, or sometimes we think justifiable, and we forego judgment for mercy in order to save, in order to save those relationships. Jesus on the cross means that your Father in heaven, chose left-handed power as the way to change the world, as the way to change you. He chose the cross as the be-all and end-all of God's answer for the peoples of the earth divided and enslaved by sin. It takes time. It's not a quick fix, but it's one that lasts. It's a power and a love that restores, a power that redeems, and one that builds people up into who they are as sons and daughters of Christ. It's encouragement instead of the ever-present control of guilt that never lets go. And by the way, God has not changed his mind on this strategy. Even for you, even for that problem child or difficult situation, God has chosen for all times to be the King and King and the Lord of Lords who came to earth to show us a different way, a way that saves and a way that lasts.